Welcome to Super Tatis for Parshas Vayishlach. We will start with two favorite stories about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. The first one is, they both revolve around his mita of Anova. He was a very humble person. The first one was that at one point in time, he sent a letter to somebody who had corresponded. You have to remember that a lot of rabbinic correspondence happened just through letters and not through conversations. So he addressed the letter to Harav, Hagon, Godol Hador, Muflug Behoro, etc., with all the accolades that one would expect for Talmud Chacham, the super highest order. And the person who received the letter wrote back, "Why are you making fun of me?" Like he was offended. He felt like Rabbi Akiva Eiger was kind of jeering at him because he wasn't the Gadol Hador. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger shrugged it off. He said, "I don't know. I just assumed that that's how people greet people. That's what they put in the letters to me." And he wasn't joking. He never had even a havamina that he was a Gadol Hador. So I heard that mipi Shmu. I think it's a lovely story to show the level of anava, even for somebody who has a lot to be praised for. A second story about Rabbi Akiva Eiger is absolutely wild. I was told that it's in the back of a sefer called Chutam Ashulash, and I have to do the research to find it. But it's a really remarkable story. During the Dor of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, there was a gvir who was particularly wealthy, but didn't really have heirs to give his property to, and instead he left a instruction that his property should all be given to the Gadol Hador. The problem was that the Gadol Hador wasn't named, and everybody was trying to figure out, well, you know, who is this supposed to go to? So eventually, this was processed in Beis Din. And it was thought that it should be given to Rav Chaim Volozhiner. But Rav Chaim Volozhiner wasn't so convinced with them. And he said, you know, I think that you guys should be done. The questioner whether Rabbi Akiva Eiger is a greater Talmud Chacham than me. So they did a diyun, and the truth was, at the end of the Din Terah, they determined that Rabbi Akiva Eiger indeed was the Gadol Hador over Rav Chaim Volozhiner, and the estate was awarded to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. The problem was that Rabbi Akiva Eiger wasn't as certain as the Beis Din was, and wasn't as certain as Rav Chaim Volozhiner was, and he didn't take the money. Instead, what did he do? He took the money and donated it to build a hospital in his city. So that's just another case of the anivus of a true gadol. So okay, so now the story about Shechem and Dina, a famous story. Shimon and Levi go to the city of Shechem, and they do this whole ruse to get everybody weak, to tell them to go do a bris milah. And one of the questions, of course, is how Shimon and Levi could go and kill all of the residents of this city if they did not participate actively in the act of kidnapping. So the Das Zaken with the Balei Tosfos has a very amazing answer, which I think about from time to time, is that he says, you know, it says, "Biyom Ashlishi, biyosam koavim." They were hurting during the third day. So says the Taz, you know what happened? They decided they wanted to go into a bris. They were ready to become part of Klal Yisrael. They really had accepted it b'shtei yadayim. But you know what happened? What happened was they did the bris, and as we learned by Avram Avinu already, the third day is really the most painful day, right? And what happened was when it got really, really rough, they regretted that they did it. And when it comes to, you know, I understand everything's tough. I understand that this is an adjustment. I understand all of that. But when you have charata for doing a mitzvah, that is a punishable and an actionable offense. And that is what took place. So next piece is the story about the Mechitzas Machanos, when Yaakov is coming up against his meeting with Esav, he splits up the camps and he says, Katonti. He says, you know, Nismatu Zechuyosai, I might not have enough Zechuyos. And the question is, Yaakov Avinu is the Churim HaShulash, Yaakov Avinu is an Adam HaSholem, rocks are fighting to go under his head. Are we really sure that he's in such trouble that he needs to do Hishtadlus as opposed to just have Bitachon on a Kadosh Baruch Hu? And the Ibn Ezra just says a very simple thing, which I think expresses kind of the feeling of a concept that I see over and over again, and it's called the tzaddik double standard. When a tzaddik comes and thinks about the din, there's a din for a normal person, and there's a din for a tzaddik. When a tzaddik is going to be judged based on their own darga, and the greater they are, the higher level of scrutiny they'll be held to. Indeed, if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, for example, and generally this seems to be a current in the understanding of what a Chilul Hashem is any time a person performs at a noticeable level below the expectation for them, that can become a Chilul Hashem and give ripen to a Chilul Hashem, as it were. So because of that, it's very, very important. It's very, very important to know that we are all setting our own standard. And once that standard is set, we should do our very best to hold to it and continue to grow. Next, we have towards the end of the Sidra, like the sixth Aliyah or so, we have all the Yichusim of Esav. And obviously, we say not a letter is wasted in the Torah, so why is this very important? The Rambam says in the Muravuchim the reason is because we want to know who's a Malik. So you see them come out, so that's just in a very important point of information for us, is to know that this is very important for us to know, because we have a mitzvah that revolves around Amalek. Next one, this is a beautiful last week. I mentioned a Menachem Tzion from Rabbi Menachem Sachs, and today I'll do another one, is we have the death of Devorah Menekes Rivka. Devorah Menekes Rivka does not get a lot of a lot of attention, because this is the only time we hear of her. They bury her there, and they call it Alon Bachus, the name of the place. So the question is, why the big deal about this person who we hear nothing about before, and we really hear nothing about after? So Rabbi Sachs makes a very important point, is saying that, you know, when we look at Rivka, we see all the trappings of a really extraordinary person, and she grew up in a household that was extraordinary, but in the other direction, meaning to say she had all of the bad influences that one could possibly wish for in the recipe for a Russia, but yet she became a tzaddikess despite her surroundings, despite her upbringing, despite her family. So how did she do that? Oh, it must be Menekes Rivka. Menekes Rivka is the person who raised her, meaning to say there must have been some good hashpos on her life, good influences, and this must be it. That's why all of a sudden there's such a big hesped and sadness and alun bachus and everything else for her, because this person was really a linchpin in the development of Rivka. Next story is the famous Yaakov Avinu, the Rashi, that says he prepares betfilu uvedoron uvemalchama. The Evan Shlema, interestingly, the Amun of Hashkacha, the Baal Evan Shlema, in a footnote, I noticed he mentions, this is Rav Molzin, one of the Talmidei Agra, he mentions that in the pattern of Tefillah Melchama Doron, you kind of see both Hishtadlus and Bitachon, because Tefillah, you know, it's not exactly taking things in your own hand per se, but saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you take care of it. Kadosh Baruch Hu already knew to take care of it, but Maisa, it's not, you know, doing something biadayim that's trying to change the situation per se. It's interesting that Yaakov Avinu does both. There's you know, a Rabbeinu Yonah that in Mishle that talks about the importance of both both bitachon and hishtadlus. But the Evan Shlema says that notice which one comes first, that it's tefillah first. Next, I want to make a point is that all of these three methods, you know, everything you could possibly do to prepare. Rabbi Yosef Blauschlita mentions that, you know, Yaakov Avinu prepares for the greatest ordeal of his life, right? He's going to have a battle with Esav, he's going to confront it, he splits the camp, he does tefillah, he does mabuchim, but that ordeal doesn't happen, right? He doesn't have a battle with Esav. What does he have instead? He has an interaction that was completely, you know, the biggest ordeal of his life was something completely unexpected. He goes and he has a wrestling match with a malach. So the question that comes from that is, how was he prepared for that? Meaning, normally you say you're going to have this giant ordeal of your life. Would it not be appropriate for you to do all this preparation? How do you, you know, like, it's such a big deal. If you want to succeed, that's the recipe for it. So how did he succeed without that recipe? How did he prepare? And Rabbi Blau, if I recall correctly, said, look, he did prepare. He prepared his whole life trying to grow, because we cannot predict all of the situations that we're going to encounter in life. We don't know what's going to be the biggest ordeal, and we don't know what will or what won't. But we do know is that we need to be ready, and the best way is to make ourselves our best selves. Last story is, of course, or last Dvar Torah, is about the famed Pachim Katanim, those little jugs that Rashi states Yaakov Avinu goes back to get. It's really kind of curious to try to understand why it is that he goes back over Mahavari Avok to collect these small vessels. In the context of the greater storyline, you know, he's running for his life and he's trying to protect his camp. What motivates him to do such a seemingly minor item? So three approaches. Approach number one is that Yaakov needs them for a mitzvah. So the Maskil of David explains that these pachim had wine and oil that would be used for kodshim, and they needed to be preserved. We see that immediately after this incident, Yaakov makes a matzeva, and he anoints them with oil and wine, so this must have been them. The Riosh Shlomo, the Maharshal, suggests that Yaakov's guarding these jugs was like the fulfillment of a neder, and as a reward for Yaakov's return to guard this oil, a miracle was later done for the house of the Chashmonaim during Chanukah, very timely. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that Yaakov needed the contents of the jugs to take care of his family and his camp, so he was really thinking for other people. But that's the approach number one, is that it was for a mitzvah. Approach number two is, as a matter of principle, Yaakov felt that it was necessary to guard whatever he owned. Rav Shimshon Farhar says that when a person honestly acquires property, regardless of the value, he sees Hashem's hashgacha in their ownership and therefore feels very responsible for the item. Even the most small and seemingly insignificant matter comes from Hashem's bracha and requires attention and care. Similarly, Rabbi Rucham Levavitz says that after Hashem gives you something, the gift needs to be guarded. Approach number three is quite remarkable, is that Yaakov Avinu really shouldn't have gone back. This is a really interesting Kli Yakar. He says that Yaakov going back was a momentary lapse in his attribute of histapkus, of feeling satisfied. Normally, Yaakov felt that he had what he needed and nothing else was necessary. However, for a brief moment, Yaakov was moderately unsatisfied and felt the need to return for simple vessels. At that moment, the enemy pounced upon him in a moment of weakness. This experience can hint to the operation of the Yetzer Hara that will pounce upon you immediately when you open up even a pinhole of opportunity. So now, our further thought question, kind of at Zeta Laderech, is the first approach we said was that Yaakov was going to go do a mitzvah, and we gave three approaches of what that would be, but don't we have a concept, generally speaking, of shluchei mitzvah einin zaken, meaning somebody who's involved in a mitzvah, they're not going to be damaged, so how could it be that Yaakov emerges here with damage on his leg after his fight with the Malach? Thank you, and have a lovely Shabbos.